Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll have Chris Mason coming up at 9:30, get his thoughts on the Preds as they take on the LA Kings tonight at Bridgestone Arena. It is Preds game day, brought to you by Social Furniture. Check out their new shipment of sectionals and sofas this weekend with all colors to choose from. Same day delivery, Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue near White Bridge Road. Looking forward to see Mays coming up a little bit later this hour at 9:30. Right now, talking Vols, and Joe, this Tennessee offense, drawing some comparisons to an offense that we saw just a few years ago light up the SEC, light up college football, and was an offense that became virtually unstoppable by the end of the year. And also a lot of high draft picks, a lot of really good NFL players in that offense as well. That was 2019 LSU with Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. The list goes on and on and on about how good those guys were in college. And think about the names I just read off and what they look like in the NFL at the moment as well. Pretty good stuff there. I think you and I would both agree that Tennessee, from an NFL talent standpoint, probably does not approach what I just read off with LSU there offensively. But I thought it was interesting. Emily Proud, our friend from 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports HQ, put this out yesterday. Through six games, the comparison's not that far off. 2019 LSU through six games, 3,367 yards. Tennessee's at 3,306. 40 touchdowns for the LSU offense, 37 for Tennessee, 6 turnovers for LSU, 7 turnovers for Tennessee. So while the LSU offense has been better than Tennessee's this year through six games, it's not by much. Those are pretty close numbers, Joe. What do you make of that stat that Emily Proud threw out there yesterday?
Yeah, it's compelling, and I'm not shocked by it. And I do think of LSU 2019 just in terms of, okay, what defense out there is going to deal with this? What was the best defense that LSU team faced in 2019? Would it have been Clemson?
Probably Clemson.
Probably Clemson, right? They blew through Alabama on the road. They blew through Georgia in the SEC title game. And then, of course, they just annihilated Clemson. So, again, as you pointed out earlier, part of them going 15-0 and crushing everyone, basically, had to do also with a defense that held Georgia to 10.
Right.
A defense that held Oklahoma to 28, Clemson to 25. You know, the one offense that got at them, well, Ole Miss had a pretty good game, but they put 58 on Ole Miss. But, you know, Alabama 46-41 game, that was a barn burner, man. But it was also, like, different from Saturday. I never thought that LSU-Bama game, they were kind of two scores ahead or one score ahead, right? Like, it never felt like Alabama was going to win that game. That's how great that team was. And, you know, and just video game numbers against a lot of other teams. You know, that was a more complete team. But the offensive comparison, I definitely have the same feeling. Like, who has the defense good enough? And we're going to find out. That's the great thing. A lot of years in college football, you don't get the game that you'd love to see, or you hope it happens in the playoff. Well, we're going to get to see Tennessee go to Georgia, and I think that's the best chance of any defense in college football this year. Like, I think Michigan's defense is good. I'm trying to think of who else out there might even be in the discussion. I mean, Clemson's defense is good. Those two might have chance.
Alabama's defense is good.
Well, exactly.
They put up 52 on them, yeah.
Exactly. So that's the thing. Like, I mean, I think though, like, they're comparable. I don't think Michigan's defense is as talented at all as Alabama's, Clemson. So it's Georgia. Georgia has the best chance, especially at home, of stopping this defense or stopping this Tennessee offense. And I'm just not sure they will. Like, I can't sit here right now and say I love their chances. Now, they might win because the difference between, again, those teams, Tennessee and LSU, is that Tennessee does not have pros all over its defense like that LSU defense did.
Yeah.
But the offense is it's a similar feel in a different way. It's not super high picks. You know, we're going to be great players in the NFL. It is a lot of guys who are going to play in the NFL, though, and I think that's true of a couple guys at least up front.
Well, the interesting part to me is kind of the schedule comparison. So these were the first six games for LSU in 2019. Georgia Southern, a great game against Texas on the road. Northwestern State, or I don't even know who that is.
It's in Louisiana.
There we go. Vanderbilt, Utah State, and then a very good Florida team. So, you know, you go by Tennessee schedule, Ball State, on the road at Pittsburgh, home against Akron, home against Florida, on the road at LSU, and home against Alabama. Like, you could make an argument Tennessee's schedule a little bit better than that LSU team's was through the first six games. So,
oh, definitely.
That's the interesting part is, like, as Tennessee continues to go through here, can they keep pace with LSU? Now, after that, it was when LSU really started to take off. I mean, really the one game where they got held in check was that weird Auburn game.
Yeah.
They only put up 23 points. Other than that, I mean, they just absolutely destroyed people and were putting up 45, 50 points a game after that from then on out. So, again, like, if you're giving me the choice, I'm taking that LSU offense 10 times out of 10 over this Tennessee offense. But the fact that it's even close numerically – kind of shows you what Tennessee's getting done offensively right now.
Yeah, and of course, if you're a Tennessee fan, you hope – basically, you hope like the game at Georgia is like the game at Alabama for that offense, which they go there 46 points, and then it's 58 against Ole Miss, 56 against Arkansas, 50 against Texas A&M, 37 against Georgia, 63 on the freaking Sooners, and then just a nice, cool, calm 42-25 blowout of Clemson to win it all. Like, the offense just took it to another level. I'm trying to imagine Tennessee's offense right now, you know, taking it to another level. But, gee, Cedric Tillman is coming back at
that's
some
the
point.
Thing.
that's why these discussions, and I know people who hate Tennessee want to laugh at it or discredit, you know, Alabama's not that good this year or whatever. These discussions are all real now because that offense is that good. Different way. It is scheme. You know, I think it's more shaded towards scheme. LSU scheme was good too.
Joe Brady, baby.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they had talent for years, right? I mean, they had talent for years and were underwhelming, you know, with their offense. And of course, Joe Brady, I think got a lot of credit that year, and he should have got a lot of credit that year for how he opened things up and how he figured it out. So it was both, but of course this Tennessee team, it's not the, oh my God, NFL GMs are beating down the door to get all these guys at the top of the draft talent. It is a lot of talent too. So we're going to underrate the talent of Tennessee because the scheme's so good, but it is two things working together. And Hendon Hooker, just on his own, yeah, the scheme has helped him. But the plays he's made consistently, running around, the throws he's made in big moments, the touch on, like, you know, it's great Jalin Hyatt gets open, but you also have to make some of those throws. Some of them are easy. I mean, he's so open. But he made some big-time throws for some of those five touchdown passes to Jalin Hyatt the other day, for example. Hendon Hooker should not be discounted or discredited because he's in the scheme. And by the way, The Athletic straw poll just came out. Hendon Hooker, leader for the Heisman.
Yeah. Well, look, we talk about Hooker and Hyatt and Brew McCoy and Cedric Tillman coming back, all the playmakers that Tennessee has. But, Joe, I keep going back to this. Look, there's one guy that they have that is probably, if he keeps playing the way he is right now, going to get drafted higher than every single one of those guys I just talked about, and that's Darnell Wright at right tackle. The guy was unbelievable against Alabama. And, you know, Jim Nagy on Twitter just talked about this a few minutes ago. That matchup against Alabama and Will Anderson and what he was able to do against that front caught the attention of a lot of people involved in the NFL draft. And Darnell Wright doing well for himself so far, as is everybody on that Tennessee offensive line.
Yeah, no, he's obviously helped himself a lot. Now, of course, he's better on the right side. It was a smart move by Tennessee's coaching staff to move him to where – and that's where he's going to play in the NFL. He's a right tackle. Now, you know, right tackles, how high do they go? Well, sometimes they go pretty
high in
the
draft. Sometimes they go very high.
As people around here know. So, maybe he is the highest drafted. I'm also – look, you know, with Hooker, I mean, look, there are some – he does not have exactly the same, you know, arm talent of some of these other guys. Like, I think Hooker should be the Heisman front runner, and he is. And by the way, I'm looking at this. He has 107 points in our straw poll with 33 first-place votes. Stroud has 4 first-place votes. No one else has any. Bryce Young has moved up to third. But I was going to say, Bryce Young, I think you could argue, like, was the best player on the field Saturday. You could argue that. Or that he like if I had the first pick, as much as I love C.J. Stroud, I don't know, man. He's bigger, and he probably fits the bill more than Bryce Young, but I might have to take Bryce Young.
Bryce Young's pretty darn good.
Regardless, Hooker, you know, he slots in behind those guys. I'm still curious to keep watching this. All eyes are on Hendon Hooker here. And if, for example, if he goes into Georgia and plays big-time football and they win that game, and they, you know, if he's great all the way through, I still think he can bring himself up. I think he can bring himself up to the second round. Yeah, we'll see after that. And I think Jalen Hyatt, I'm interested in where he might go to. I think Jalen Hyatt with that speed is helping himself a ton right now.
Well, to that point, Wes in Clarksville on the text line says, why is Jalen Hyatt not in Heisman talk? He had 5 touchdowns in a game. And Joey does have 595 yards on the season and 10 touchdowns and 33 catches. Look.
Because quarterbacks win the Heisman.
Because quarterbacks win the Heisman is basically the answer.
And I know DeVonta Smith did 2 years ago, so I get it.
But DeVonta Smith was also, I think, pretty clearly the best player.
Yes.
Like, I still think Hendon Hooker is their best player.
Yes.
Although yeah. Jalen Hyatt's been sensational. No question about it.
Well, that last game, I mean, put a couple more of those on the barbecue and well, then you know, we can talk, okay?
Yeah, no question about that. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation on the Vols. And look at some interesting paths to the college football playoff for Tennessee with the Alabama game in the rearview mirror. There are a ton of scenarios out there. We'll get to them coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Preds fans, hang out before the Preds games at the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 1025, 1063, the game. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. The puck drops tonight at 8:30. So looking forward to that coming up tonight. 615-737-1025. Talking Vols. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. So, Joe, I said this yesterday in the aftermath of the win for Tennessee against Alabama. You take down Alabama, you move to 6-0 on the year, and all these conversations, whether you want to talk about Hendon Hooker for Heisman or the SEC title game or even the college football playoff, to me, every bit of that's on the table now for Tennessee after you take down Alabama. And as it relates to the college football playoff, there are a few different paths that I think Tennessee could ultimately get there. There are also some where I think it could get really interesting and really hairy for Tennessee as it relates to the college football playoff. I mean, look, Joe, the easiest path is you go 12-0 in the regular season, you win the SEC title game, and you're the number one seed in the college football playoff. I think if you go 12-0 in the regular season and you lose in the SEC title game, you're probably still in the college football playoff. What really starts to get interesting is if you look at the schedule and let's say Tennessee goes 11-1 and they fall to Georgia and they don't make the SEC title game, you're 11-1, Georgia and Alabama have one loss because Alabama takes down Georgia in the SEC title game. Maybe even Ole Miss finishes with one loss. Right now they're undefeated. They've got the Egg Bowl coming up. They've got a game with Alabama coming up. Michigan plays Ohio State. Maybe that's their only loss. That gets really interesting, Joe, when you start to think about some of these potential one-loss teams as they move forward here. Now, I think some of this is going to clear up. There will be some of these teams that we're talking about that will probably drop one, if not two, of these games as they move forward here. So the picture will be a little bit clearer than it is right now as they move ahead. But there are several different scenarios, including an undefeated TCU or an undefeated Clemson that you still have to factor in as well, that could really make this college football playoff race very interesting.
Yeah, like at this point, you've got Chip Kelly, an undefeated UCLA. You got Dino Babers, an undefeated Syracuse.
Yep.
Sonny Dykes, an undefeated TCU. I think eventually that's going to sort itself out. Well, Clemson, Syracuse this week. It's a big one.
That's a big one.
I mean, if you're a Tennessee fan and you're starting to look around the college football landscape, yeah, root for Syracuse because yep. I don't think Syracuse is going to carry that through. Root for somebody to beat TCU. I think the Big 12 will end up probably beating up on itself. It's interesting because I thought Oklahoma State looked like maybe they were the best team, and they're taking it to TCU on the road and then blow that game.
They totally screwed it up.
So really that could actually be a good thing for other teams out there worrying about a Big 12 team. You got UCLA and Oregon this week. I've heard some rumblings out there, people that think Oregon right now looks like a playoff caliber team and might run the table, and that would be interesting. But when you get destroyed to the extent they did by Georgia, it's always an interesting discussion because it was the first game of the year and teams can change so much. But still, there's such a massive gap. That was JV varsity, you know? So I think you probably are rooting for, I guess, Oregon to beat UCLA. So you don't have an undefeated team. I think when it boils down to it, if you get to that scenario of Bama, Georgia, Tennessee with a good loss to Georgia, Ohio State undefeated, Clemson undefeated, I think Tennessee probably would be the odd team out, and then Michigan would slot behind that. Let's say Michigan and Tennessee. I think Michigan and Tennessee, comparing them as 11-1 teams, there's a big difference in quality, in strength of record, in strength of schedule, and quality of wins. Big difference. I think that would be a slam dunk for Tennessee by comparison. The only thing that could hurt it is, you know, just in that room, whether anybody says it out loud, just the feeling of, do we want this many SEC teams? Don't we want, you know, a Big Ten team in there? But again, we're talking about a scenario with if you have Ohio State undefeated, then that takes care of that. But, yeah, I think that's the tough situation for Tennessee would be Alabama, Georgia basically winning out to Atlanta and then multiple undefeateds also there. Because I just don't think – even though Tennessee would have an argument against Clemson, they would.
Yeah.
But I don't – I have my doubts.
They wouldn't get in.
Yeah, I just have my doubts that undefeated Clemson would be excluded for being undefeated. And what would – you know, it actually helps Clemson that, like – you know, like Syracuse right now, this would be a big win. Now, who knows if it holds up that way, but yeah, undefeated is just still hard to overcome in this thing.
Well, it's interesting because like Tennessee has the best win in the country so far. Taking down Alabama is the best win in the country. So it's interesting from this standpoint, Joe, because I think on one hand, you need Alabama to continue to win and play well. So that win looks all the more impressive at the end for your resume. But you also maybe at some point need Alabama to lose to knock themselves out of the playoff conversation. Like if Alabama goes on with one loss, even though you beat them head-to-head and they win the SEC title, they're in. I mean, they're in the college football playoff. So that's kind of the interesting dynamic if you're a Tennessee fan. And again, I said this earlier, you know, I think I probably made the mistake of just assuming they were going 10-2 after all this stuff with Alabama and Georgia being the losses. You take down Alabama, like I wouldn't pick Tennessee to beat Georgia right now, but I'm not writing it off the table. Like Tennessee can absolutely go on the road and beat Georgia. So that's the simplest path. Go 12-0 and things probably take care of themselves at that point. But it is interesting from the standpoint of like you need Alabama to look like as good of a win as it could possibly look if you're Tennessee, but also at some point you might need them to lose.
Yeah, and that's it's fascinating from the Alabama perspective because you would naturally think of let that win hold up, like it's the best win, let's keep it the best win, but that's a team that could then leapfrog you by winning the West, and you know they would have to win, they'd have to beat Georgia, but
yeah,
I mean that's where it's, I guess you could root for them until then, but you know the great thing is, Robbie, is that if you're a Tennessee fan, you just really just have to root for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's on the table. I mean, I think Tennessee Kentucky could be interesting, and I'm the timing of that with Georgia next for Tennessee is interesting. The way Kentucky plays is interesting. I do think that's the kind of team that can show up and just say, we're going to punch you in the mouth, and Tennessee gets a little tight in a game like that, and that could be interesting. I'm not ruling that out as an interesting game. But I also just want to fast forward to Georgia because I just can't wait to see this offense against that defense in that setting. I mean, it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be epic. And, boy, did not have that on the bingo card coming into this year. After that win over Bama, really liked Tennessee's chances at Georgia. I mean, who expected to be saying that this year?
By the way, meanwhile, Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss just sitting across on the other side right now, undefeated as well, technically in first place in the SEC West at the moment. So, I mean, they're going to have a showdown with Alabama coming up. And, you know, if Alabama loses that game, they're done in terms of the college football playoff conversation. But, you know, you could conceivably have four SEC teams with one loss at the end of this thing. Like, that absolutely could happen.
Yeah, it's wild. And I just – it's a great job by Lane Kiffin. They're figuring it out. Watched quite a bit of the Auburn-Ole Miss game in the press box at Neyland Saturday, and I don't like their defense at all. Again, you can look at Tennessee's defense for stretches and not like it much either, but I don't like their defense at all. And watching that Kentucky, and Kentucky screwed that game up. You know,
they did.
Yes, as Knezeval knows.
Yes.
Not that she really cares anymore.
No, that game hurt bad.
Blood is pumping orange. Yeah. And that's one of those, you know, that's the thing. If Kentucky just doesn't give them the ball at the end and wins that game, that makes the Kentucky-Tennessee a much bigger game, and it eliminates Ole Miss from this discussion. But I think they will ultimately get eliminated, probably by Alabama.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Chris Mason. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds and the Kings coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Looking forward to that conversation this Sunday following the Titans game. Tune in for the NFL postgame with Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow live from the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway. The postgame show brought to you by Renter's Warehouse, Two Rivers Ford. Custom order your new Ford from Two Rivers Ford and Superbook Sports, voted number one sports book in Vegas. Download their app today. Chris Mason next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
VIP. Let's kick it.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning, and it is that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Chris Mason, former Preds goaltender and current Preds TV analyst, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C. Mace, good morning. What's going on?
Not too much. I'm just currently chopping garlic. I was going to put some in my omelet. Nice. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yep. Supposed to be good for you.
Nice.
What an absolute stud Chris Mason continues to be here on this program. So, C. Mace, obviously you get two big wins if you're the Predators in Prague. You come back over and they've just looked off the last couple of games against the Stars. What do you make of the start to the season for the Preds and kind of exactly where they are now heading into a big one tonight against the Kings?
Yeah, it's tough. The beginning of the season is, you know, everybody's extremely high because you get the big two wins in Prague against San Jose, who's, you know, probably, I shouldn't say probably, a very below average team. I thought they looked great in game one. I thought they dominated the Sharks game two. Wasn't so good. They kind of hung on and, you know, they got back and they looked tired. They looked slow. I don't know if they had their top gear, if they were able to access that. This team works hard. You know, I thought they worked hard in both games. But, you know, I think myself, I don't know about you guys, but I think I might have underestimated Dallas a little bit. I think with the coaching change there and, you know, the way that they're playing now, and they've kind of, you know, taken the leash off of some of their young players, and, you know, and Ben and Sagan, they look like, you know, young players, and that's a fast team over there. You know, they haven't played that. I can't remember the last time Dallas ever played that style of hockey. So that was an eye-opener for me, and I think for the team as well. They couldn't keep up.
Yeah, no, obviously they look very good. Like you said, it's very early, Chris. We were talking earlier. I mean, there are a lot of things right now that if you just look at the last two games that can be better, and we know, you know, should be better. But we were talking earlier about the Hurd line kind of needing to get going. What are you seeing in particular from those guys right now?
Yeah, I think kind of like, you know, the rest, that's a line, as we know, that is responsible for driving the team. They John Hines likes to say they want them to get the team into the battle. So in order to do that, you've got to be able to get in and play in the offensive zone and be able to get in the forecheck and to make contact, you know, on their defensemen and make things happen down there and wear them down. And if they're able to do that, you know, essentially the rest of the team will kind of, you know, get in there and follow their lead. But, you know, they're coming around. I feel like they're getting better. I thought even though the Dallas games weren't great by anybody, by any stretch. I thought they looked better in those games than they did over in Prague. But it's a line. You have Trenin and Janot, who had big offensive seasons last year. You know, they've got to get their mindset. You know, maybe there's some internal pressure on themselves to produce, and they've got to kind of take a step back. And I think, the Hines had talked to them when they came back and just said, look, if you just play the way you play, do what you do, don't worry about the numbers. Points will come if you play the way that, you know, you guys play with that identity. So I think it's a little bit of trying to figure that out, balance, you know, in internally with, especially with Juneau and Trenin.
Chris Mason on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So C-Mace, I mean, obviously, production-wise, 4 goals in 4 games with Nino Niederreiter, you'll take that all day long. But just in terms of his overall game, what have you seen from Niederreiter thus far, and how big of a factor do you think he's going to be for this team as they move forward?
I think he's going to be huge. I think that's that line, you know, with Johansson and Niederreiter, and then, you know, Tolvanen, and now I think it's only 4 games in, but their best line, most consistent line, game in, game out. You know, they were responsible for the majority of the chances. You know, they didn't get many against Dallas, but they're the ones that I thought probably had the best, you know, analytical numbers to back up their play. Ryan Johansson's been an absolute beast in the faceoff circle. And Niederreiter is, you know, I think he's got the opportunity to have a career year. He's going to get that top six, you know, I think in Carolina and other places he's played, he's been more of a third liner. You get the, you know, some time obviously up with the second line, but I think the way that he plays and paired up with Johansson, he's going to give Johansson some space out there. He's going to get in there and hunt pucks down and you know, give Joey a better chance to do what he does and maybe have some stability with his line instead of it's a carousel with the Johansson line the last couple of years. So I think Niederreiter was just a perfect signing in the offseason, and it looks like so far he's as advertised.
Simeon, what do you think of this Kings team? Obviously some familiar faces now with Fiala joining Arvidsson, kind of a mix of young and old, some talent, look pretty good so far. What do you think about this matchup and that team?
Yeah, they've scored a ton of goals in the last two games. This will be the third game in 4 nights, I believe, played last night. So they scored 5 and 7. It's just like you said, they got some old good Wiley veterans that still have some left in the tank, and then they've got an exciting young group of players coming up. And Jonathan Quick, I expect we'll see Peterson tonight. Quick played last night, but it's one of those teams. I thought they made a good push there last year, and it's a sneaky team. And if you're not ready to defend and, you know, play the right way, they're going to stuff a bunch of pucks in the net and you'll be down, you know, 3-0 before you know it. So this is a decent team that the Preds are going to have to play a lot better than they did against Dallas. They gave up too many odd man rushes. This team is fast. They're going to be blowing the zone and they're going to be aggressive offensively. You mentioned Fiala. He's got 5 points in his last two games, so he's a streaky player. And they've got some skill over there. So guys got to be ready. And I think with the way that two Dallas games went and, you know, the talk out of the locker room, which is talk, but they're saying the right things and definitely not happy with their last two games against Dallas. So I think we can no longer use the jet lag as an excuse. So it's now the guys got to crank it up and get to the level they're capable of.
Oh, well, two guys that drove the bus on that all year long, C-Mace, last year were Duchesne and Forsberg, obviously, with the seasons that they've had. But what do you make of, obviously, the production's not there yet in 2 points through four games, but overall, that line with those two in Granlund, what do you even make of the way that it's looked thus far?
I think you've seen flashes. You know, it's been there at times. I feel they're playing the right way. It's a little inconsistent right now. And again, the beginning of the season is so tough. And I feel kind of like maybe a little bit like Janot and, you know, Trennan. They had such big offensive seasons last year that they're, you know, maybe, well, I got to get 40 again. I mean, you can't get 40 in the first 10 games. You gotta continue to do the right things and play the way that, you know, I really feel that their game took a huge step. Obviously offensively, but the way that they go to the battle areas, the way that they compete, the way that they hunt down pucks, and they've taken that ownership on the defensive side of things, which I think in turn has turned them, you know, given them a better chance to have offensive success. So they're kind of, you know, they got to get going. You know, they at times they've looked good, and at times you haven't really noticed them out there. So much like the majority of the team, I think there's another level that they can get to, no question, if you want to be that number one line. And obviously those guys are all power play guys, and that's another area that has got to step up. It was such a big weapon for them last year, and I think they've got only the one goal this year. So that's another department, I think, once that gets going and, you know, things will start to come around. But it's still too early to get, you know, a read on how the season's going to go. But there's, like the rest of the team, I think there's definitely another level for that line.
All right, garlic and what else? Give us the C-Mace omelet recipe. I'm always looking for omelet recipes.
Well, this one's just, this one's garlic, chopped spinach. And my favorite cheese is that, it's that Irish cheese.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name. It's out of the package right now. I think you know what I'm talking about. It's oh man.
I totally know. It's like, is it like, yeah, the white cheddar kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I just got a simple one going today, and then I just drown in the hot sauce after. So.
Oh yeah. Absolute champion, legend, Chris Mason, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C-Mace, appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Enjoy that omelet. We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thanks, guys. Love talking. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris Mason, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Preds, Titans, Vols, everything on the table. We'll get to all of it coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Chris Mason for joining us in the last segment. Preds taking on the LA Kings tonight. Remember that start time tonight, a little bit later at Bridgestone Arena. It's 8:30 tonight. The game on ESPN, on television. Of course, you can, as always, listen to it here on 102.5 The Game as well. Big night tonight. I think C-Mace hit on something important in the last segment there, Joe. They need Forsberg and Duchesne to get going tonight. You know, I think they've been okay at times so far this year, but, you know, one goal apiece for both of them through four games, 2 points apiece for both of them through four games. You know, it's too early in the season to be worried about production at this point, but I think more in just the way they're playing the game. They need both of them along with Granlund on that line to get moving and get going, because I just think they've been very average at best thus far, and this team can't survive with those three guys being average.
So if in the next week or so, next week, 10 days, couple weeks, one of those two lines that we've been talking about today, either the Granlund line or the Hurd line, what would be more important for the Preds to get going if you had to pick one of the two?
Oh, I think Forsberg and Duchesne. I mean, look at the Hurd line's important, and I agree with CMA. It's like in terms of, you know, establishing the way that they want to play the game, I think they're critical, and they did that a lot last year. But ultimately, like, if this team is going to be any good, if they're going to be a playoff team, if they're going to compete for, you know, maybe second, third spot in that Central Division, like we talked about heading into the year, like, they're going to need Forsberg and Duchesne to be great offensively. And that doesn't even necessarily mean what they were last year in terms of the goal total, but they need them to be great offensively. So, look, Forsberg's getting paid to be great offensively. Duchesne's getting paid to be great offensively. So they need those guys to get going. And look, I don't think they've been bad so far or anything like that. I think there's another couple of gears that they have to their game that they've just not approached yet. And I think C-Mace hit on something else. You know, it was good to see the power play get on the board in Dallas, but that power play's got to get going too.
Yeah, it's always interesting. It does happen. Like, when something, it's exactly the same, right? And it comes back and it's like, well, the exact same results are going to happen. And then it does, for whatever reason, that doesn't happen. I mean, obviously, a lot of the optimism about this team, it not centered around the same production as we've talked about so often, right? We don't expect, it's not realistic to expect Duchesne, Forsberg, Yossi, all of them to have the same ridiculous numbers, but you still expect very good production from that line, from those guys, from that power play.
Yeah.
And I still do, but you need a jolt at some point. Tonight would be a good time for that.
Well, that's the other thing. Yossi's got 1 point in four games. You know, and, you know, for a defenseman, you normally don't freak out about that. But for a guy that was putting up seemingly 3 points a game at the end of last year, like, what's going on there? 1 point in four games. So there's just, look, the Dallas games were bad. There's no way around it. They were bad in both of the Dallas games. And now it's time to kind of strap your boots on and get rolling if you're the Predators. So I think a big opportunity tonight for them to do that against the Kings. And we'll see if they can take advantage of that at home, playing a team that's on the second half of a back-to-back, but as C-Mace pointed out, has been a team that's very dangerous offensively so far this year. So we'll see if the Predators can get that done tonight. We've talked a lot about the Titans today and the new stadium, a deal that was reached between the mayor and the team. Mayor John Cooper joining Stillman and Company coming up at 4 o'clock today, so make sure you're tuned in for that. But Delanie Walker retiring as a Titan, making it official today. The press conference coming up at 2:30. Joe, good to see Delanie Walker closing out his career officially with the Titans.
Yeah, they've had some of these retirements recently. I think the big one was, you know, when Jarrell Casey came back after all the bitterness over the trade to Denver, that was cool to see. Arakpo had one recently, and now Delanie Walker, one of the, yeah, it's, we talked a little bit about him earlier, but I just went back and reread a 2019 story I did on him and forgot so much of it, but man, what a fascinating, he's just a really, it's a unique story. He's a very, I mean, his path, even just to get to like college football, then to the NFL, was improbable. And as you pointed out earlier in the show, you're talking about a guy who spent a lot of years as a low pick, as a reserve tight end, hanging on in the league. And then all of a sudden, basically, you know, he starts to come on in San Fran, and then he gets here and he just blows up as one of the best tight ends in the league. Just the whole story is quite unique.
There was some good news and bad news for the Titans yesterday as it relates to on the field in this matchup coming up against the Colts on Sunday. Bud Dupree back out there at practice. So it's a little bit of a different schedule this week. They had the bye week last week where you're off from Thursday to Sunday, and it's mandated by the CBA. You're back in there this week with the Titans and the Colts coming up on Sunday. Bud Dupree looks like he's at least practicing at the moment, which is good. No Racy McMath this week. I think Vrabel used the word eventually for Racy McMath to be back, hopefully this season. So there's that part of it as well. And Ola Adeniyi going on IR as well. So overall, not great news from the Titans, but hopefully Bud Dupree being able to practice means he's also able to play and hopefully able to play on a consistent basis coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, they badly need that. They also, you know, Vrabel also gave the potentially on both Nate Davis and I think Imani Hooker. Imani Hooker told Glenn in the locker room that he's still in concussion protocol. So that's an extended concussion protocol, which of course can happen. But that would be a big deal for them to get Hooker back at safety, Dupree back on the edge, given what they did defensively for a lot of that first meeting with the Colts. You add those two elements, and that should be good news for your defense. And of course, the corner group is still, very interesting what they would do, but I don't think that they would probably have Caleb Farley out there getting beat deep by Alec Pierce again this time.
I would say probably not, but you never know. Maybe they found something the bye week there with Caleb Farley. Nice little role for him.
I don't think that we've seen the last of Caleb Farley on the field. And apart from, if you're Vrabel and his coaches, obviously you're trying to win every week. But apart from that, there is still an organizational responsibility to try to get value out of your first round pick from last year, right? So certainly no one in there has given up on him. It's going to be really interesting to see, what that looks like moving forward. How many opportunities does he get the rest of the way? So, I mean, injuries may dictate that he has to have more, but I think at this point, he's probably down the pecking order a little bit after the last game.
The reaction continuing to pour in today, and I expect it to be all week long, of Tennessee's big win against Alabama. It was funny. Like, I went to the gym yesterday. I went to eat last night. Went to a lot of different places. There are Tennessee shirts everywhere. And I don't know if I just didn't notice them before, but, man, they were out in force yesterday. The Vol Nation is responding pretty well to this win. I read an article where, like, Tennessee merchandise since the Alabama game is up, like, an absurd percentage so far. I mean, the Vols fans are out. And let me tell you, Vol Twitter is on one right now as it relates to the Alabama fan base. Lots of sniping back and forth between Tennessee and Alabama fans right now.
I just want to tip my cap to all the people who have already been wearing their orange these years. See, those are the people who say, hey, now enjoy this. You deserve this more than anybody. The people jump on the bandwagon now, well, that's what happens. Right? What the heck did Big Orange Matt call them? The Tennessee Titers. Yeah, the Tennessee Titers. Now, what are you doing? Are you wavering? Are you going back to the orange? And I want to know, like, what Tennessee other SEC media war will erupt today. Yesterday you had Wes Rucker, Matt Jones going at it. What will we get today? Is there some Alabama still to happen? Is it time to start maybe a little M. Griffin, Georgia? Oh, M. Griffin can get something going with some Homer media wars. I mean, we got a lot of possibilities out there.
Well, my favorite part of yesterday was I watched the Nick Saban press conference as I do every Monday. And, he could just tell, apparently, Alabama, normally they're chanting when they come out of the tunnel, and there was no chanting going on in Neyland Stadium on Saturday. And apparently he turned around and was like, what are you guys doing? Why aren't y'all chanting out here? He knew from then that maybe the intensity level, a little bit of anxiety heading into the game, Joe.
Yeah, he used that anxiety. And Will Anderson used the word anxiety. He's afraid of the Vols. My goodness. Not only did the Vols win, they just flat out intimidate Alabama now. Oh,
what a week.
What is the world coming to?
Oh, my goodness. Chase Willie and D-May, so have you covered on all of it coming up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.